This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And after a year and a half of sensory deprivation while imprisoned and psychological torture, a military tribunal on Bradley Manning has just come to a close. We'll be getting the latest details about that entire military procedure today from Jeff Patterson. We'll have a live report. This is 5 o'clock Shadow, and I'm Robert Knight in New York. Today, there were held concluding arguments in an Article 32 hearing at Fort Meade for Private Bradley Manning, who is accused of releasing confidential cables and other content to WikiLeaks. The hearing has been a contentious one, and it follows 18 months of imprisonment under the most arduous possible circumstances of deprivation, nudity, and other maltreatments. We're now joined live by Jeff Patterson, who has been following the case and who also works with BradleyManning.org. And Jeff, can you bring us up to date on the case against Bradley Manning?
Last week, I've been in the courtroom at Fort Meade, Maryland, right next door to the National Security Agency, and the prosecution has outlined a pretty thorough case of linking Bradley Manning to downloading this information and transferring it to the WikiLeaks website. That really didn't come as news to me. 18 months ago when we started the Bradley Manning Support Network, we did so on the assumption that Bradley Manning was probably the person who released this information, but we're supporting Bradley not because we think he's innocent, but because we actually think he did it. And it was a great thing that he did. The prosecution made no attempt to show that anybody was actually harmed from the information. They made no attempt to claim that Bradley Manning received any kind of benefit from releasing the information. And the prosecution's own documents lay out a motive of a young man wanting to change the world for a better, seeing these things in the course of doing his job as an intelligence analyst, made the decision to probably break particular military guidelines of sharing this information, but felt that we as a public needed to see this information, to paraphrase Bradley Manning's chat logs, to make informed decisions as a real democracy. And if we don't act upon this information, demand reforms, then we're doomed. And that's another paraphrase that's been attributed to Bradley Manning.
What is the legal principle of arguing the greater good in the face of what may or may not be a technical or procedural violation about the release of information? What body of law and rights do we have to refer to in this appeal that has been made by his attorneys that there was no harm? What is the legal background of that?
Well, we have to remember this is a military court under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and it's not exactly the same as the civilian court. Bradley Manning, I expect that the commanding general will take the recommendations of the investigating officer who has run this investigation, and he'll charge Bradley Manning with these crimes. But also, the question is, will he be charged with aiding the enemy, which the prosecutors allowed, which prosecutors believe he did, and also various counts of the Espionage Act. And these, to me, are clearly, they're overcharging Bradley, and David Coombs, in his closing argument today, pointed this out. They're putting the death penalty on the table with Bradley Manning in the hopes that he simply breaks, cuts a deal, works with them to go after Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. You know, the key thing is, you know, does he face a death penalty? Does he face 200 years in prison? Or does he go to jail for X number of years but still retains some portion of his life down the road? These are issues of mitigation and things that and Bradley's attorney has brought up the issue that he wasn't a good soldier, that he was clearly troubled by his sexual identity as a young gay man. He was, you know, he took on a female persona online, and he was clearly troubled, and he let his military supervisors know that he was having issues of this nature, begged for help. He received no help. So again, it's a mitigating issue of what kind of punishment Bradley will eventually get. Now, the other part of that mitigation is the greater good. Who was harmed? Nobody. Who was helped? Well, the people trying to overthrow the Tunisian government, the Egyptian government, the people of Iraq who were fighting to get U.S. troops not to stay beyond the deadline coming up next week. Those people were benefited from this information.
I'm taken by the phrase in the argument of the prosecution about aiding the enemy. As far as I can recall, the United States is not at war with any particular nation, with the possible exception of North Korea, where there is an armistice, and that war never technically ended, or police action, as it is called as a term of art. So the absence of a declared war enemy seems to mitigate the charges, no?
Well, today in the courtroom, the prosecution put up a video of a terrorist spokesperson, a jihadist of some kind, making a speech where he references, where he shows the collateral murder video alongside of him, saying that these are reasons why the infidels need to be driven out of Iraq. And that seems to be the sole foundation of the aiding the enemy charge.
Their point being?
The point being is that if the bad guys knew the truth, then they're also emboldened to fighting the good guys or something. But they might as well put up an edition of the New York Times and said, the New York Times is aiding the enemy because it makes America look bad. It makes U.S. troops look bad. That's literally the extent of their argument.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow, and we are speaking with Jeff Patterson of BradleyManning.org and support work for the beleaguered private. And you've been at the NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, Maryland, where there is quite a bit of military activity. You've been able to see what we have not been able to see each day. And my first question about what you've witnessed inside that trial room is, how does Bradley Manning look? How strong, secure does he appear to be after a tremendously arduous ordeal during his imprisonment?
Well, he's been transferred out of the Quantico Marine Brig since about June of this year. So he's had 4 or 5 months, 6 months now of normal treatment as a pretrial detainee. He's actually looking, he looks fine. Physically, he looks fine. He chats regularly with his defense attorneys. And if you saw him on the street, you wouldn't notice anything unique about him, except that, he's height-wise, he's relatively short, and he probably, weighs maybe 130 or something like that, but that's probably his natural stature.
Jeff, can you help people know some of the indignities and perhaps psychological tortures that Bradley Manning went through during much of his detention? In particular, I recall his being forced to sleep naked, for him being put on suicide watch. Was that a precaution or a suggestion to him? What did Bradley Manning go through?
Well, we know for a fact that the suicide watch that Bradley Manning was subjected to was designed simply as a rationale to enforce a unique treatment upon Bradley that no other prisoner at no other time has ever been subjected to a Quantico. Two of the mental health professionals at Quantico were willing and ready to testify that that was the case. The investigating officer in this case deemed that was irrelevant. That he would not hear about the illegal pretrial punishment Bradley was subjected to. The investigating officer also ruled out any discussion of President Obama's declaration that Bradley Manning was guilty prior to even the pretrial hearing. And this is what's called unlawful command influence under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, in that no superior in the chain of command should influence a court-martial that's underway. These are two clear violations of military law that the military has violated and yet has still faced no consequence for doing so. And it's also important to point out that the investigating officer in this case, who is supposed to be an impartial Army officer, literally worked for the Justice Department up to 9 days ago as an employee. When I'm sitting in the courtroom, On my right are representatives of various government agencies helping the prosecution of Bradley Manning, one of them, the Justice Department. So you have the employee of the Justice Department being an allegedly impartial arbiter, while his employers are sitting there prosecuting the defendant. It's bizarre if you actually believe that there's some kind of fairness going on here.
That brings us to some disturbing developments outside of this proceeding, and there are two things that are troubling. One is that the Obama administration has moved ahead with more reclassification of mundane data in federal government and federal archives more than ever before in United States history. In addition, President Barack Obama himself, the White House, insisted on legislation that would codify his ability to arbitrarily arrest and detain indefinitely American citizens, plus pretty much whoever else he decided to detain. And is there any relationship between that creeping secrecy and militarization of American society and an emblem or a bellwether that may be represented by the case of Bradley Manning? Is Bradley Manning about more than his own case and sort of a precursor for a possible fate for the rest of us?
Well, one thing I could say is overclassification is at the heart of the matter here. Bradley Manning allegedly released possibly 700,000 classified documents. The release of 700,000 documents, the State Department, every agency of the government has unable to show that any significant harm came out of 700,000 documents. Each one of them, allegedly, is supposed to cause likely harm. So what's it mean to our classification system if we're literally classifying nearly a million documents when, in fact, there really was no basis for the classification in the first place? It is not about protecting us, but protecting people from embarrassment, the people that we allegedly pay our tax dollars to represent us, to keep us safe, to fight, you know, protect us from bad guys and fight our wars and whatnot. That's a mistake. For the government, they're trying to punish Bradley Manning, make an example out of him. Anybody in the future thinks about releasing classified information, even if there's possible war crimes in those documents, don't do it. We'll destroy you even before you get your day in court. And for people like us and probably the listeners of Pacifica, it's about trying to, you know, provide that extra courage to people in the government when they see wrongdoings, when they see illegal acts, when they see corporations colluding with our government to the detriment of the public good, that hopefully they'll stand up and say something and be a whistleblower. And so, for Bradley Manning's case, that's what's at stake when I look at it.
Well, Jeff Patterson, one other question here remains. Is this the first gambit of redacting the world, of going after WikiLeaks and kindred institutions and spirits? How much of a squeeze on Bradley Manning and how effective do you think that can be in what one might presume the Obama administration's real goal is, to get Julian Assange?
Well, you know, I sat in the courtroom next to attorneys for Julian Assange, who are very, you know, they're very interested in seeing what evidence the government lays out against Bradley Manning, because their assumption is that Julian Assange will be somehow dragged before a U.S. court at some point and faced with that same evidence. What I could say is that the government, is making the case that Bradley had some chats with people representing WikiLeaks. But nothing that I saw was any different than any confidential source contacting a member of the media and saying, hey, I got some evidence of some wrongdoing, and them saying, well, you know, let's show me more. You know, is this a real story or not? And every journalist since the beginning of newspapers has done that. So why is Julian Assange any different in that regard? I don't think he is. I simply think he's playing the role that newspapers used to play.
Daniel Ellsberg, who had a watershed moment with the Pentagon Papers and the release of those, recently said, "My trial was ended because of gross governmental misconduct under President Nixon. The court-martial should be ended now for Bradley Manning for exactly the same reason. There's been gross illegal conduct against Bradley Manning in the form of the incarceration without trial and many other reasons for this travesty. With the support of someone like Daniel Ellsberg and many others, can you tell us about the work that is being done by BradleyManning.org or by the Manning Support Group?
We've hired Bradley Manning Selective Attorney. We've paid $120,000. We'll probably have to pay another $75,000 by the end of the court-martial. We are dedicated to raising every penny they need to give Bradley the best possible defense. And outside, we're trying to change public opinion. We've purchased billboards in the Washington, D.C. area. We had 100 people stand out in a pretty freezing wind on Friday, the first day, for a nine-hour vigil. And we had 300 people march and rally on military property on Fort Meade Saturday. And we're going to be – we had 40 different places around the world who held rallies Bradley in the last weekend. So, you know, this sort of – we're looking at this as a trial run of much larger – protests coming up, leading up to his court-martial in either the spring or summer, also probably going to be held at Fort Meade in the same courtroom.
How can people join you in the work of spreading the word for whistleblowers like Bradley Manning?
You know, I would definitely encourage people to check out Bradley Manning. Every day we have posted detailed notes at the court-martial. So, you know, if you couldn't make it through three levels of security, you could read our notes. We post daily updates. And you know, we're literally going to do everything we possibly can. And I think we've created a grassroots movement already that spans many continents. But we realize we're going to have to do a whole heck of a lot more to save this young man's life.
BradleyManning.org, and for those who are concerned about rights and releases and freedom of information, one might do well to be in touch. Jeff Patterson, thank you so much for your persistence in monitoring this trial, and I leave you the last word as to what comes next and what you'll be doing about it.
Well, we fully expect a general court-martial to be called for Bradley's life, literally, to be on the line. And, you know, I guess I'm at a loss for words after days of protesting and sitting in the trial. I'm watching a historic case just as important as Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers unfolding. If there was a way that I could sort of convey that to other people, I'm going to keep trying to do that.
Well, thank you for doing that with us here today on 5 O'Clock Shadow. Jeff Patterson of BradleyManning.org. That's BradleyManning.org. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we commend to your attention some of who Bradley Manning is. For those coming late into this saga, we now present a documentary about Bradley Manning produced by Panorama.
A neighborhood in Baghdad, July 2007. Shots are fired from the air, fired from an American Apache helicopter. Minutes later, U.S. infantry soldier Ethan McCord arrives at the scene.
When I came up onto that scene, I remember thinking, you know, oh, well, this guy with the RPG or this guy with the AK-47 obviously did this to the van. There's no way in hell that we would do this.
This military video shocked the world when WikiLeaks released it almost a year ago. And this man is being blamed for illegally downloading it from a secured army network. 23-year-old Bradley Manning, who has been held in solitary confinement for 7 months. A small group of supporters is demanding his release, but their voices are drowned out by media that has largely presumed his guilt.
I'm sorry, that's treason. So there's no gray area about it. And
so
that is a capital offense. You
capital
can't
offense,
have
so you're saying execution.
Army.
You're saying execution.
If he is convicted of treason, I absolutely would support a capital punishment.
Oh, shut down WikiLeaks. Get a presidential order to shut that down. This guy should be tried. Manning should be tried for treason, executed if he's found guilty.
Whoever in our government leaked that information is guilty of treason. And I think anything less than execution is too kind a penalty.
The onboard camera of this attack helicopter is targeting a group of people in a neighborhood in Baghdad. Among them are two journalists from the news agency Reuters, the photographer Nami Noeldin and his assistant Said Hamiga. The men can neither see nor hear the helicopter that is stalking them. It is too far away. The pilots mistake Noeldin's camera for a weapon. And attack them.
Let me know when you get them.
Watch you. Light them all up.
Come on, fire.
Scenes that resemble a video game, but what you see here is real. Real people. The pilots are laughing, making macabre jokes.
God damn it, Kyle.
Sorry. I hit my head.
The Apache gunner is still targeting the heavily wounded Reuters employee Saad Hamiga. He will not survive. Later, the Pentagon investigates the incident and concludes that chopper pilots had done nothing wrong. The attack was part of a combat operation. It was justified because earlier American soldiers had come under fire by insurgents. The Pentagon has denied our request for an interview. However, one individual has been punished, Bradley Manning, in jail accused of leaking the video. The charges, downloading and disseminating classified information. His roots lie in Europe. As a teenager, he moved to Great Britain, to the small town Haverford West. His mother is British, his father American. Here, he attended school for 4 years and graduated with Tom Dyer. He was one of Manning's closest friends. To Dyer, it is no surprise that Manning might have released the video. He remembers his friend as a great idealist, even when he was still a teenager.
He had a great moral compass. He knew in himself what was wrong and what was right, and he didn't like the thought of people abusing their status and making other people feel small and doing things that were wrong.
It was precisely for this reason that Manning joined the army. He said he wanted to fight for the good, but during the Iraq War, he apparently started to have doubts. As an intelligence analyst, he had access to secret military files, including the video with the disturbing scenes. The video shows how Reuters employee Said Hamiga is struggling for his life. He survived the first shots fired from the attack helicopter. The pilots are still keeping track of him. Meanwhile, Saleh Matasha Tumal and his two small children, Sayad and Duaha, are on their way to school. From his van, he sees the wounded Reuters employee lying on the curb. Tumal stops the car, gets out to help him. His two little children remain in the front of the van. The pilots request permission to shoot, again and again. The father is unaware of all of this. He does not even notice the helicopter above him. Tumal wants to rush the wounded Reuters employee to a hospital. His compassion will seal his fate.
1-8, gauge, clear.
Come on.
Clear. Clear.
Even when the soldiers realize that they have shot children, they only hesitate for a moment, then make cynical remarks from the air.
Oh, it's their fault for bringing their kids to a battle.
That's right.
Since that day, U.S. Army soldier Ethan McCord has been heavily traumatized. He still cannot get the images out of his head. As an Army infantryman, he was one of the first soldiers on the scene. When he arrives at the van, he hears a 5-year-old girl scream.
So I grabbed the girl and I took her into the house behind the van with a medic, and we were cleaning her up. And what I did is I took my gloves off and was pulling glass out of her eyes so that she can blink without cutting her eyes.
Then McCord runs back to the van to check on the boy. The child is still alive but badly injured. He carries the boy back to the medics as well. As his superiors observe this, they vehemently order him to stop saving the children. Instead, he should do his job and secure the area they command.
Another thing that bothered me was the fact that I was the only one to care enough, it seemed, for the children to try to ensure that they get medical attention.
Former Army officer Ray McGovern is shocked by the actions of the pilots. He had been a CIA analyst for 27 years and an advisor to seven presidents, including George Bush Sr.
How could anyone justify shooting up that van, shooting up the person who was crawling onto the curb? These are war crimes, pure and simple. When I learned to be a soldier, an officer in the U.S. Army, I learned that you don't shoot at civilians, you certainly don't shoot at people trying to rescue the wounded, and you don't blow up vans with a couple of children in them.
In the Pentagon investigation report, there's no mention of war crimes. The pilots had reacted adequately.
Here's the government saying that we did no wrong, but yet they lied. They covered up the story. They covered up everything. And then all of a sudden being like, okay, well, Bradley Manning, who released this video, he's the wrongdoer in this whole situation. It's kind of like, well, we have to have a guinea pig, a fall guy.
Meanwhile, Bradley Manning is isolated. His friend David House is one of the few supporting him, and besides his lawyer, the only person currently visiting Manning in prison.
He is held for 23 hours a day in solitary confinement in his cell. His cell has no windows, and he's not allowed to go outside or see the outdoors. He's not allowed to exercise. The 1 hour a day he is allowed out of his cell, he's allowed to walk in chains in an empty room for an hour, and that was what the military calls exercise in this case.
Conditions that resemble torture. For 7 months, Bradley Manning has been kept in the maximum security ward of the military prison in Quantico, still without trial. The Pentagon regards the prison conditions as perfectly fine, and conservative military experts also think they are appropriate.
Well, first of all, you have to define solitary confinement, you know, which is a very broad and open-ended term, as what that means. Does it mean sensory deprivation, which some people consider torture? I don't think he's suffering sensory deprivation. So, as long as somebody's allowed to have 4 hours of continuous sleep, the body can function just fine.
The United Nations, however, has a different view. The UN has picked up the case and is examining the accusations of torture.
Because solitary confinement has been shown to produce the kind of severe mental and psychological harm that is associated with the definition of torture, or if less severe, still associated with cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment.
That doesn't mean that your personal comfort and interests come ahead of the U.S. government. Somebody's been accused of a crime and they're being detained under the conditions which are appropriate for them. That's the way every legal judicial system in the entire Western world works.
Prison without trial for Bradley Manning, freedom for the Apache pilots. Former U.S. soldier Ethan McCord finds this incomprehensible. He's pleased the video has been leaked so that the public can form its own opinion.
I think that Bradley Manning is a hero. I believe that this is a human being who is compassionate, who saw illegal activities taking place on a video. Granted, it was a couple years later, but still wanted the world to see that these actions are intolerable. And, he's a hero for showing it. He's a hero for releasing it, if he released it.
My view on Bradley Manning is that he's a very courageous young man who, with 22 years, did what I didn't have the guts to do during the Vietnam War.
For 7 years, Ethan McCord had fought proudly for his country. Today, he feels ashamed.
I didn't pull the triggers that day. I didn't shoot people. I didn't shoot those people on the ground. But it's me being a part of the system that is doing that to the people of Iraq is disgusting, and it hurts. And I was after that day, it was really hard for me to justify being in Iraq and being a soldier. And I would never be a soldier again. For the American government, it's too dirty.
A panorama deconstruction of the collateral murder video, the Iraq helicopter gunship images of the murders of various civilians in Baghdad during the conduct of the U.S. occupation that will continue despite the fact of renaming combat troops as trainers. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacific Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we continue contextualizing today's Article 32 hearing for Private First Class Bradley Manning and its connection perhaps to WikiLeaks by now taking a look at the man behind the Manning, as it were. Julian Assange, the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, was in WBAI's studios where he spoke with the crew of Off the Hook at exactly the time that WikiLeaks was releasing the collateral murder video from the warfare in Iraq. And to put things in a broader context, we hear some of that interview now.
Julian, welcome to WBAI. Believe me, you're a hero here.
Thank you.
I think you're probably one of the most popular people to walk through the door here. First of all, amazing congratulations for just pulling off what you do on a day-to-day basis with WikiLeaks. Can you start with just telling us something about how WikiLeaks got started, how you got involved with WikiLeaks?
So WikiLeaks started publishing in July 2007. I was in development in 2006. I was one of the principal people involved in its founding. We saw that from journalism community, from activism community, from people involved in cyberpunks, from those people who had fought the crypto wars, that what really pushed the reform agenda forward was unauthorized disclosures. And in fact, unauthorized disclosures, before they are disclosed, give off an economic signal that you can smell. And that signal is, if work is put into restricting something from the public, then the people who know best, the people who have authored the document, the people who are trying to cover it up or conceal it, believe that it will have a reform effect. So if you can selectively go after that information that has been restricted, you can selectively produce reform. And we have sort of developed a theory on how to do that and have tried to put it into practice and have been largely successful, although there's a lot more work to do.
Well, you've come up against everybody from PayPal to Scientology, and I think you've pretty much landed on your feet almost each time. The most recent battle was with PayPal. They froze your assets at one point. And
2 points, actually.
How many points?
2 points.
Really? It's incredible. They can just do that anytime they want. Do they ever give a reason?
No, they gave no reason for this latest freezing, but PayPal is now some sort of a chaotic network. It is so complex internally, the decision-making, and automated and put into neural networks, that there is no sort of accountable decision-making involved.
You've also come up against Chinese censorship. In fact, I think that's one of the forces behind the founding of WikiLeaks, was it not?
Yes, and even before we started publishing, the Chinese added us to their filter under the basis, I think, that we had Wang Dan on our advisory board. Wang Dan was one of the leaders of the Tiananmen Square revolt.
I believe sentenced to 10 years?
Yeah, sentenced to prison. Serve,
just for releasing a memo or something, or an email?
Serve six. He was the number one on the fugitive list for a while over Tiananmen.
So there are all these people around the world being imprisoned and tortured and prosecuted in various ways just for releasing information, whistleblowing, things like that. And what you provide is a way for people to do this and remain anonymous.
Yeah, so we've tried hard to use both technical systems, so cryptographic systems and advanced networking, and to combining that with legal approaches that multinational companies use to avoid tax. So that is spreading our infrastructure over multiple legal jurisdictions and sticking it into particularly favorable legal jurisdictions like Sweden, which has a source protection law, which makes it even a criminal offense for me to reveal my sources, or for any of our consultants or technical advisors or any ISP that we have hired to do something, and which also makes it an offense for government under most circumstances to spy on those communications. And Belgium, which has a communications protection law, between journalists and sources, which is very broad. It defines source in a broad way, journalist activity in a broad way, and doesn't mention any particular communications method, so it refers to every possible communication type.
So those are the friendlier regimes towards freedom of speech, journalism, things like that, the Scandinavian countries for the most part, and of course, do you want to tell us what's happening with Iceland?
Yeah, so we saw something really quite interesting. We had dealt with a number of offshore banks. The biggest case was, the most well-known case is the private Swiss bank, Bank Julius Baer, which is the biggest private bank. That means it specializes in private banking. You need $1 million at least to even start opening an account. And it tried to sue us in San Francisco quite aggressively. We managed to defeat that. But we saw how they were working their operations with using Caribbean and off African coast islands and specialized laws there, secrecy laws, to funnel assets around the world. And companies would then use the registrations in those places to enable asset hiding. And we thought, well, we could possibly turn this idea on its head if we had a country that would be willing to do it, which we could make some kind of openness haven. We could have a country that specialized and put together a package of really good laws to protect journalists, investigative journalism, ISPs, communications between sources and journalists, the whole flow of information from people who have access, whistleblowers, confidential government sources, computer hackers, to the people who give it out to the public. And in the end, that's ISPs and telecommunications companies. So if you could protect that whole pipeline, that whole flow, given that all publishing is moving onto the Internet, we could in some way protect publishing everywhere in the world because people can stick servers or company registrations into Iceland, provided the Icelandic government would do it or some other government would have the political will to do that.
Julian Assange in the studios of WBAI speaking with Emmanuel Goldstein and the crew of Off the Hook, which is heard every Wednesday on radio station WBAI. And further information on that is available at 2600.org. And that interview took place at the time that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks published the Iraq collateral murder video, the killing of civilians by that helicopter gunship or the team of helicopter gunships that Bradley Manning, Private First Class Bradley Manning, is being accused of having leaked during the Article 32 proceeding that took place this week. And he is now waiting a probable court-martial. This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we welcome your comments and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org, and we thank Michael G. Haskins for engineering today. Here now, the song for Bradley Manning by David Rovix.
What they say is true. He was paid to read reports, find the patterns sifting through. As he read the data, the patterns did emerge. Patterns that were clear both before and since the surge. Patterns of abuse of the most horrific kind. Gunning down civilians out of view and mind. Gunning down the opposition in the middle of the night. Sending off the scholars to be tortured out of sight. Sometimes you need desperate measures when you live in desperate times. Private Manning saw he was looking at war crimes. He wondered what to do to allow the dead to speak. He finally decided to contact WikiLeaks. Now it's all out on the table and everybody knows. The emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. Now Adrian Lionel has has to live within his skin. He stabbed Bradley in the back, called the cops and turned him in. But not before the soldier took a 500,000 files. If you printed all the pages, they'd stretch on for miles. Evidence against the state, right from the horse's mouth. Machinations in the west, bombings in the south. A treasure trove of details for all the globe to see. How much they need to lie and kill for democracy. How many drone strikes have hit villages, leaving everyone to die? They blamed it on someone else, the official lied, not I. How many coups have been plotted by ambassadors who say that free and fair elections be the order of the day? Now it's all out on the table and everybody knows. The emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. Genie's out of the bottle, and they're trying to stuff it back and stop it from illuminating everything we lack, such as the rule of law or playing by the book. Look, you can read it, it's right here. The ship of state is run by crooks, and they vilify the messengers, call them every name for daring to blow the whistle on the nature of their game, the game of taking lives and endangering the rest in order for the wealthy few to do what they do best, dominate the world for the corporate elite. But now their cover's blown from their head down to their feet, and now the stars and stripes is looking much more like a rag. The lid is off the box, the cat's out of the bag. Now it's all out on the table and everybody knows. The emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes. Now it's all out on the table, and everybody knows. The emperor is naked, he's not wearing any clothes.